Good evening, dear friends. It is a great blessing to be here with you this evening, to see all of your faces on the screen, to realize that we come in a common intention, a shared intention to be and to participate as Christ. The Christ candle is lit behind me as a symbol that Christ is always with us, today, always, in us, among us, as us. So we find ourselves in the season of Easter. Today is Thursday in the second week of Easter. Where are we finding sources of resurrected life? On Sunday, Peter spoke of the stranger that was Christ that walked between the two on the road to Emmaus. And this called to mind an interview with Krista Tippett of On Being that she did with a gentleman by the name of Padraig O'Tuama, who is a peace activist in Northern Ireland, a theologian, and a poet. And this interview was conducted in 2017, and so is our opening reflection this evening, an evening that we will be speaking about the place of I am, the place of the I, and the here of the I. So let us listen to what this gentleman has to say to us this evening. So many are saying, I wish things were different. I wish I were somewhere else. I wish this were not happening. The place where you are called is here, and you must treat it as a powerful stranger. Powerful strangers might be benevolent, but only might. Powerful strangers can also be unsettling and troubling. And powerful strangers can have their own way within which they cause you to question who you are and where you're from. The notion of saying hello to here requires a fairly robust capacity to tell the truth about what is really going on. And that can be difficult. The complication is that life comes with no trigger warning. Things happen out of the blue. Something happens, and suddenly, with no preparation, you find yourself in the middle of something you didn't wish to happen. I think that's why, for me, the language of here is really important, because that's a space for when you are in a situation for which nothing has prepared you. It may not be gentle or even consoling. It just might be part of the truth. But even that can be healing, to simply know part of the truth. So the powerful stranger is here with a capital H. Do you recognize him or her? Amen. So just a few housekeeping notes. You should have received an email a few days ago, a little tutorial about sharing on Zoom. So again, this evening, there will be a time to share and to respond, in fact, several times. And if you look at the bottom, I think it's the bottom on most screens if you have a PC, You will notice a participants icon. Just as a refresher, you can click on this little icon, and then a panel will open to your right. And at the bottom, there will be three little dots. If you click on them, you will be given a raised hand option. So all you have to do is click on that little raised hand, and your wishes will be known. And you will be placed in a queue wherein you will be called upon and unmuted. And there will be no need to unmute or be concerned about the sound, because that will be handled for you. Everyone present will be able to see you and to hear you. So now, once again, let us prepare ourselves to listen deeply to what is being offered and to move into that inmost part of our being, to prepare to enter first into Lectio Divina, to receive knowledge, to have our emotional center enlivened with valuation, to have our body sense truth and goodness of what is being offered, in order to receive all and manifest the Word made flesh in our own beings. With back upright and heart open, we breathe in and hold the gift of Christ's life that is evolving in us. We hold for just a moment, and we breathe out this healing goodness into the world. In this breathing, we hand over all complexities and anxieties of the day. And we stand unencumbered before God and one another. I will share our reading on the screen. And you may wish to, it comes from today's message, and you can read along with me, or simply listen with your eyes closed, or gaze at the mandala, and wonder how it's informing the message. What is the word or the impression for my life now? Listening through the lens of the work in my own heart. To be nothing is to consent to being a simple creature. This is the place of encounter with I am that I am. When there is not more me, myself, or mine, only I am remains. Then the I may fall away, leaving just the am. Such is the grace of inner resurrection and the reward of seeking no reward. From Galatians, it is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. To be nothing is to consent to being a simple creature. This is the place of encounter with I am that I am. When there is not more me, myself, or mine, only I am remains. Then the I may fall away, leaving just the am. Such is the grace of inner resurrection and the reward of seeking no reward. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. To be nothing is to consent to being a simple creature. This is the place of encounter with I am that I am. When there is not more me, myself, or mine, only I am remains. Then the I may fall away, just leaving the am. Such is the grace of inner resurrection and the reward of seeking no reward. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. You're now invited to share what you have received from this message. Yes, Chuck.
What called to me was the reward of receiving no reward. It just reminded me of all the striving that I do, all the trying to get somewhere is really pointless in the bigger scheme of things, and makes me realize the I am is the place to be. And then the I can drop away, and leaving just the am. Mm-hmm.
So be it, Chuck. Thank you. Thank you. Catherine.
I heard it's not I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And in that, I heard metanoia. And what a radical new way of thinking that it's not I in me, it's Christ in me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you, Catherine. Thank you. Michael.
In those three phases, I heard a successive diminishment of self-reflection, which I think is interesting in the context of our classes on self-observation.
Yes.
Which is useful once perhaps another story, but that as self-reflection diminishes, then the I in experience also diminishes, and what one is left with is awareness.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Michael. Jim and Bev McCune.
Yes, it's Bev. I heard a description of men or humans number 5, 6, 7 mm-hmm. in that description, in what was read, and then the mandala kind of became an image for the conscious circle of humanity.
Ah. Lovely. Yes. Thank you, Bev. Thank you. Paco.
Hi. Yes, this sort of to follow up on Chuck's thoughts, the idea of striving, seeking no reward, it reminds me a little bit of, is it page 10? I can't remember what the reference is, but the idea that we need to approach the work lightly. And I'm somebody who's always been striving. I've had goals at every step of the way, and now I'm more focused than ever on these work goals. And so I'm always reminding myself that if I set this up and giving myself report cards all the time, that's going to be unhelpful. So I'm just sort of enjoying the process and letting some days not be so good and some days be better, and not worrying too much about that, just staying in the work. And I think that in those times when I don't do that and I get a little disappointed, those are other eyes kind of coming into the picture. And really working against my true aim.
Thank you, Paco. Tamara and Martin Field.
Yes, so what I heard was you take away the I out of I am, and you're left with am. And to me, that was just beautiful because it reminds me of the vertical.
Yes. And
not worrying about the future or thinking too much about the past. And just being conscious and being in the present moment. And so that's kind of a work principle that I like to try to remember.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Gay.
I heard the word grace, and it reminded me of something that was either in this Thursday's assignment or maybe last week, that we have help. There is help. I used to believe that there was something to be achieved, and I could achieve it with effort, and once it was achieved, it would be a permanent state. I'm seeing now that I have these rare moments of grace. They're not something that can be described, except I would just say sheer joy. And they don't last long, maybe seconds at best. There's nothing that I do to for that to happen. It just happens. And I feel that maybe that is what's being spoken of. And I'm grateful for those moments. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. Gay, thank you. So Tom Parker.
This reading brought to mind the peeling away of the layers of the onion of the false self, or in word terms of the not eyes, so we can get to the real I or essence.
Thank you, Tom. So Tracy Stevens.
Yes, I heard the work teaching around coming to our own sense of nothingness is the path, and as it was clearly stated in the passage, and I felt like in my own personal work, there was a lot of heat around coming to terms with some of the aspects of this crisis, coming to terms with my own death, and whether that could be something that, you know, while we go through different levels of coming to terms with that, it was more around, am I willing, if it is my fate to go now and to go in a way that I wouldn't prefer. And there was a lot of work around that, a lot of struggle. But I felt like I was led through that, and just had a deep sense of surrender and acceptance. And I felt like I came to a place where I was just hopeful that this was a sense of union and a peace that passes understanding. But I observed there was a part of me that, you know, wanted to accrue some personal credit for having gotten to that place. And as sure as you know that, you know, I you know, kind of fell back into mechanical parts and complacency and all those old habits. And I guess the learning for me is, as long as there are eyes that still want to accrue credit, I have more work to do. And it's all good. It's all in God. We have we're given infinite chances and grace and help all along the way. I heard.
Amen. Amen. Well, thank you all so much. And for those of you who still have your hands up and haven't been called on, you're already in the queue for sharing on self-observation. So I thank all of you for your sharings. It was very rich, and we can take what we have received, both that which we have shared aloud and that which was held closer into the recesses of our hearts, and let it do its silent work. Amen. So tonight we do move really to the second part of the great triadic movement of self-observation, non-identification, and self-remembering. So I'm very pleased and happy to introduce Donald Janung, who will take us on this journey of discovery. And don't forget, your sharings can move into this area as well. So Donald.
Thank you, Marianne. In just a moment, I'm going to bring up a little screen. It's a highlight of what it is that we talked about last week as we kind of prepare for some of the sharings of the observations that we had during this week. So towards that. Some key points that we went through last week regarding self-observation and the practice of it. And as we launch into this, I was really happy to hear Paco say something that was very important and said so frequently when I began working with the Church of Conscious Harmony and studying this work. And that is the idea that we're not working for results. It's about the process. Engage the process. And so many of us have a business mind that, and a Western mind that's working towards results. And we'll find roadblocks because of that. So practicing self-observation, the work says that we have many more internal senses than we do external senses. And the first one that we develop is the sense of self-observation and observing eye. We can begin to get a sense of that as we continue with our self-observations. And then we talked about dividing ourselves in two. I've got to put myself in the position of being the observer and observing something. That's so unique because for most of us, when we begin the work, we take ourselves as one steady, unchanging being. I am myself, and that's just all there is to it. What is this all about, this dividing yourself into two and this legion of eyes? It seems so unusual. So dividing ourselves into essential. And then from last week, a reminder that self-observation requires attracted attention. And that is attention in the, at least in the emotional parts of centers, and at times directed attention in the intellectual parts of centers. But self-observation cannot be done mechanically. It can't require no attention whatsoever. And our self-observations, as we begin to divide ourselves in two, you get the sense, you get the clear feeling of that there's a light, there's a consciousness that's coming alive within us. And that is a wonderful experience, and one I continue to look forward to as the experience of observing eye continues to grow. So Mr. Ospensky was really big on teaching complete self-observation. That is observing in all centers, your thoughts, your emotions, your body sensations, and then give it an eye. And sometimes that last part, that part right there, giving it an eye, is something we don't give enough attention to. And my experience is when we do give a name, it doesn't need to be spot on. There's a difference between agitation and frustration. And if you get one, you call it something else, it doesn't matter. But giving it an eye just helps to begin to familiarize and develop something called building a picture of yourself. And then the next part is the inner critic. And the inner critic often has some commentary about what's being observed. And it's just another eye in us, or collection of eyes. Ones that are familiar to me is, there you go again. You sound like your father. And a lot of times in our observations, as we look at it, we say, now where did that come from? Where did I? And then you begin to hear somebody that was very impressionable on you. And then you begin to understand at a deeper level what the work is talking about when it talks about this is all learned behavior, and we're trying to learn a different way of being. And then a common one, you haven't learned anything, have you? And it reminds us of this wonderful saying in the work that can go with us forever, and that is that hypocrisy is inevitable. We just continue to keep light of self-observation on. So our exercise for the week was, and really a great exercise, because it really, that with the number of people that are participating, some of us have been involved in the work for a good number of years, and some of us are rather new to it, and some of us are very new. So the exercise this week gave us different levels to work with. So when you observe yourself that you're evoked, something's evoked, and you find blame or dislike of another, observe it in all three centers. What are the thoughts? What's the feeling of it? What's the physical sensation around this thing, person, or event? Another level is writing them down. Well, that's another way of doing what we do when we talk, and that's anchoring it outside of ourselves. So useful, because anchoring outside of ourselves, you can hear something that may have changed from the observation. It's like, I just told this to my second line group or my work partner or to the Thursday school, and it's very interesting. Some things were added on or some things were left out. One would want to know. So the third person writing it down is very helpful in part of dividing ourselves in two. And then the final one, if we're good at self-observation, we've been doing this for a while, consider just moving right on to the place of bringing up a new work idea to the place of the incoming impression, a first conscious shock. But there's something to be aware of though here with this, and that is the movement cannot go from self-observation right to self-remembering. Non-identification is a very important tool. But once you've seen an eye and it's familiar to you, why not? Why not just move right into bringing a work idea up to that place of incoming impression and transform it right then and there? So at this point, let's go ahead and share some of the experiences we had during the week. And I want to, while you're queuing up for that, there was a point in the week where I saw this this stubborn eye coming in, and the stubborn eye was familiar, and immediately I realized, and the first place I recognized it was in my stomach, in my gut, and at that time, there was a work memory in me that said, usually when you're stubborn, life doesn't go so well in terms of it being stubborn and what comes from that. And through self-observation, complete observation, knowing the name of it, being familiar with it in all three centers, there was a quick stop to that. And I could immediately let go of that position that I was in. And maybe like you, you've realized that, you know, when you're in that place of insisting that life carry itself out in a particular way, you're really not adding much good to life, and things usually don't go that well. So it was really good to have that moment. Lauren, please.
Well, I had unhanded, or I tried to unraise my hand because I was taken with the reading about the being a simple creature. And as you talked, and I think about me and the work and all my eyes, I don't seem so simple. And so what I kind of took away from it, partly with Michael's help, is that maybe it's the real I that is the simple creature. If I can ever, by nanosecond, as Gay said, maybe some nanosecond I get a glimpse or a tiny hit of the real I. Maybe that is a simple creature. But a lot of the time, the complexity of all the things that keep coming down are apparent to me.
Thank you, Lauren. Yeah. I think I saw Greta next.
Okay. I had a very fascinating experience this week. I had been talking to my spiritual partner about letting go of grudges against people. And I was working in my yard, cleaning, around a tree, and discovered a huge web of Bermuda grass roots. And suddenly, as I was pulling them up, I remembered I was holding a grudge for somebody for the past 30 years. And I simply observed the anger, the blame, the justification for holding a grudge of negative emotions for 30 years. And as I did it, I centered my feelings in my body and worked with those insidious web-like weed roots that were like the negative emotions that had insidiously inhabited my body for 30 years. And I looked at the thoughts. There was blame, there was insecurity, there was pride that somebody would do this to me. There was mistrust, there was suspicion, and those feelings were hidden in my subconscious. I worked for about 4 hours, really hard, woke up tired the next day, and talked to my spiritual partner about that, because I wasn't finished. And she said, put this person's name on your altar and make a stronger intention to let go of everything. And I did. And I worked really hard again at just first seeing. I didn't self-remember yet, but first seeing in all of those nooks and crannies and digging deep with my hands and trying to get at the roots of things, which were complete. The roots didn't even have to do with this 30-year-old grudge. They were way in the family area. So it was working backwards like that. And I finished the tree, went to sleep. When I woke up, that grudge was gone. It was gone. And I mean, with no... nothing. There was nothing there. It was great.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Thank you, Greta. Thanks for staying with it. And also thank you for modeling how we work with delight. Yeah. Martin and Tamara, please.
Okay. So I was doing the homework this week, and I was on the phone with a customer. And this customer got really mad. They called us, and I was talking to him, and she got really, really mad about something that I know was not my fault. She knows not was not my fault. That, but she was really, really mad, and she was yelling, and you know, I'd like to say I had the first conscious shock immediately, but it took me a few minutes, and. I remember at first seeing all these eyes that came up, resentment, pride, you know, I wanted to show her how she was wrong about it and all this. But then I started having this, you know, wait a minute, this is an opportunity. It just came up. And so I felt like my throat was tight, my chest was tight, and I was, you know, just feeling very, very uptight in my body. And so I thought to myself, okay, you know, this person's going through a lot. So I started finding myself externally considering, which was a really good tool for me for some reason. But anyway, that seems to be my go-to. But I started thinking, you know, this person is going through a lot of fear right now, just like all of us, and you know, a lot of, you know, cabin fever. And so I started thinking about that, and I thought, well, you know, I totally get it. And I started to understand where they were coming from. So I kind of turned it around a little bit, and I said, hey, you know, I understand your frustration. I totally, totally understand it. So let's see what we can do. I'm going to do this to try to remedy the situation. I'm going to help give you this and help you feel better about the whole thing. And she got real quiet, and then she said, well, thank you so much. And it turned the whole thing around. And, you know, I'm glad that I was able to observe myself, because I know that it was partly like definitely was pride of thinking, how, you know, how can she do this? And it kind of was a subconscious thing. And I know I remember feeling this way at times when I was like in the business world starting out and, you know, feeling not confident and feeling like people didn't trust me. And maybe sometimes people didn't have the confidence in me in the very beginning. So anyways, it was definitely some subconscious stuff coming up, but it came out to be a really nice gift. And I hung up the phone and thanked her over and over again for the opportunity to work. So anyways, that was a good homework assignment. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that clear account, Tamara. And also modeling the wonders that come with external considering and how that can change the next moment in life for us. Thank you. Lisa, please.
Hi, Donald. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I'm in a shed here. I have a strong eye that I've labeled the intervener eye that just likes to intervene in things. And the homework was to think of another that you dislike. And I have a neighbor that I dislike, and I work against that every day. And the reason I dislike my neighbor is because he ties his dog to a tree. And so I project my emotions on this dog. And when I see Thor tied to the tree, I can feel very heavy in my chest. And the emotion is anger, it's outrage. And then intellectually, I do this often. I think of ways that I can report my neighbor, ways that I can punish him for doing that. And so that's a challenge each day, because I see my neighbor and my dog and his dog each day. But the work idea that I use is I have the right not to be negative. And also, I thought there's a better way to intervene in this situation. And that's where we got permission to participate in the dog's life. And so he lets us walk Thor as often as we want. So we walk Thor twice a day. And this dog, I've never owned a dog, and this dog brings so much joy to me because he's just pure joy. And so it's been a real gift. It's a daily struggle because I do have judging eyes that continue to peck away at my neighbor. But it's good work for me.
Yeah. Thank you, Lisa. So you get to intervene in a holy way. How about that? Thank you. Yes, Gay.
I loved this week's assignment. It opened my inner eyes to so many things. The first thing that I got from it was I've been around the work for quite a while, and things get ordinary. So thinking that I had this three-step thing down, you know, I began to realize that I don't really self-observe anymore, at least in the way that it is described. So I went to the glossary or whatever they call it, and read about attention, which you talked about last week. So the directed attention, I'm beginning to be aware that it takes a lot of energy. It's very, very hard for me to stay with it for more than, 30 seconds is a long, long time. So I chose to do the part of the exercise about picking someone that I disliked. This person that I'm describing has been in my life, in my family actually, for several decades. So my dislike of this person began quite a few years ago, and I am not around the person very often. So I had just more or less filed her in the back of the file drawer. She never came up in my thoughts, or rarely. But when she did come up in my thoughts and my memory, there was this intense dislike of this person. So I closed my eyes, tried to get quiet, bring this person into my awareness, and stay with this directed attention. And I asked the question, why do you dislike this person? And what came up was, now we're talking about 4 decades I've known her, 4 decades I've disliked her. And I have based this dislike on 4 incidences, 4 events in which we just simply didn't see eye to eye, but it went much deeper than that. She has a problem with alcohol. And then I realized that her behavior reminds me of my first husband, who had the exact same behavior. So I tried to stay with that idea for a while and think, okay, I'm basing 40 years of dislike of this human in my family based on 4 different events. I know in my heart that she is much more than that. She's a total human being. She's in my family, and I could list 10 things that I admire about her. But when she comes into my memory, all 3 of my centers, I would say, glom on to these 4 events. So that was a big surprise. And in doing that and trying to stay with that, what I saw was the intellectual center with the ideas that it holds. And I had some difficulty, to tell you the truth, between teasing out the experience of the emotional center and the body center, the physical center. They just seem to be one and the same. The feeling is in my gut, in my jaw. Sometimes it's kind of hard for me to find words for the emotional center experience. So I don't even believe that I got to the second step of non-identifying. I just ran out of gas, to tell you the truth. So there was a big seeing in that for me, in that for me to really truly self-observe in the manner that's described, I have to get quiet enough. I think if I do self-observation kind of on the run and in the moment, it's more attracted attention than it is directed attention. So those are the things that I got to see this week.
Yeah. Thank you, Gay. You reminded me of experiences that I've had as well. When we're looking at emotions that are deep-seated in inner parts of centers, and the energy of them stays for quite some time, and it's just not possible for me to wrap it all up in a quick 30 seconds and move on to non-identification. It takes a while to unpack, kind of like what Greta was saying, you get 30 years worth of roots growing there. It takes a while to pull it all out. And it's like that. But I've also found that some of my best self-observations happen in retrospect when I come back to them. And I've got a fresh clarity, the energy resonance is still there. And I can put it together much better, much, much more succinct before moving into non-identification. But thank you for not moving on to the next step in a way that wasn't genuine. Let's stay with it until the fire is burned out. but also recognize that there is a point of diminished return too. And at that point right there, when it becomes, as Father Keating says, it becomes narcissistic, time to move on. Yeah. And finally, too, I was really surprised to hear you say that you find difficulty with directed attention, because I've watched you and listened to you play piano for years. And you play tunnel with you play in the tunnel with directed attention. So it's a skill that that I've often looked at and admired. Thank you. Joe and Jamie, please.
Donald, friends, hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I also observed anger unloading. So, but I also observed grace growing me while I was trying to get my baby Haven down for a nap. And I remember doing the work, and I got to a point where I whispered gently to her, I love you. And right before she fell asleep, and I looked up out into the front yard, and I saw the sunlight and the trees blowing in the wind. And I heard like a really still, small voice say, I love you, Joe. And as I was holding my baby girl, I can feel God holding me. And I think I was connected to Christ, and I felt connected to the Logos through Christ. And I was observing it, and Father Keating, I just remember him speaking, or I'm learning about how he describes unloading and how it's like taking out the garbage. You don't really go separate the oranges from the eggshells. You know, you just let it go. It's garbage, but I don't know why I shared that, but thanks.
Thank you. Beth, please.
My observation was the negative, the person who I was aversive to was myself. I was just busy doing some household things today, and on its own, I had this recollection of an interaction I had, email interaction I had earlier, and I saw myself as completely insensitive and entitled and too busy trying to get something done to be aware that there was a person on the other end. And, you know, I was just getting things done. And and I felt such self-recrimination and such shame. I consciously put myself, it was an interaction from a couple of days ago, and I don't know why it came up, but I consciously put myself back in the chair in front of my computer to feel, and it was hard to do, to feel that person and how much I hated her for being the way she was. It was just a typical business interaction, but I just felt so bad. And so I made my, it's kind of like Gay was saying, is it was an effort of directed attention just to not let myself get up, to keep myself in that position and feel all of my feelings about that. And also like Gay, it was more of a body reaction. I felt the shame, but it was more body. I also have the thoughts of what a horrible person, how could I, what a horrible person I was. And, why, you know, why can't I just remember to be conscious of other people? And after a while, what you said, Donald, became true. At some point, it just became narcissistic. I needed to let it go, and I didn't know how to let it go. So I got up, I changed centers, I walked, I went to the backyard. I was pacing around the backyard, and a little bit later, I noticed that I passed these beautiful yellow irises that I had not even noticed while I was busy pacing around with my own ruminations. But I did eventually notice the beautiful yellow irises. And the other thing that came to mind for me is what Paco had said earlier about wanting results. I wanted my self-observation and non-identification to take those feelings away, wanted them to be gone, but they were lingering on. They just lingered on. And so eventually I turned to the welcoming prayer and just acceptance. I am sometimes insensitive. Go figure. I am sometimes too busy to take account of other people. And I regret that. And I can try to do better, but I just have to accept who I am and let those feelings be there until they're not.
Thank you, Beth. There was a lot in that sharing. Yes, I appreciate it. It's big work to intentionally put ourselves into a position where genuine self-observation can happen. Yeah. Thank you. Well, I'd like to continue to hear from all the other hands that are up, but I need to move on to the next stage, and that is talking about the next stage in the process, and hopefully that there'll be opportunity for y'all to continue sharing in just a little bit. So towards the end of self-observation, often we get a little commentary from a critic, another eye or a group of eyes in us. And this is one of the final steps right before we move into the practice of non-identification. And there's something about the critic that's worth saying. And that is, I have always found that there's something useful in what the critic says. So I don't totally just put it off to the side. It's telling me something that I see that it is life talking to me in a way, and it's worthy to hear. But that's about the rest. That's about it. There's a lot of ill-spiritedness in a lot of what the critic says. But I always look for that little gem of truth from it as well. So now I'm going to bring up on the screen a little bit more about non-identification. Okay. So these are some of the key points. Non-identification from the tremendous, tremendous email for today, the depth of it. And let's go right to the second one. And to identify habitually, putting our feeling of I into everything that happens, everything we experience, the thought, sensation, event, relationship, etc., that it's me, it's mine, or about me. That this is a form of hypnotism. And this is such a beautiful ending part to the sentence, which is both personal and collective. When we see it for ourselves, we can see that it's all around us. It's that way for others. The next is that the state of identification persists, although the object changed frequently. So you'll notice in self-observation that we're just moving from one identity to another identity to another identity, and that's it. Tim said in a class one time, he said, the state of humanity is like this. You're born, you find things in life that you like, you find things in life that you don't like, and you die. And that's the extent of a human life. You know, there was a lot of laughter in the room and around that. But wow, it was, for me, it hit me so profound, because I could look back to my life and I could see the value in what was being said with that. The identification continues, just the objects of it change. Each of us is identified with 101 unnecessary thoughts, and each of us has 101 unnecessary emotions. But one of the things that's so intriguing and useful with self-observation is you begin to see where your mind is so frequently. It's like, of all the things to think about, is that really what I want to be using my life energy for, is thinking about that? When we could be thinking about the divine, when we could be practicing self-remembering in an extraordinary way, it's really good to look and see where are the emotions and where the thoughts are predominantly. It will tell us a great deal about where we're spending our energy in life, where we're identified. And when a man is totally asleep, all this is taken is my life. And in fact, more than this, we take it as my necessary life. And that's what I was referring to a bit earlier, when I had had the experience, the first big experience of self-remembering at a real, self-observation at a very big depth. And it was around verifying what somebody had said about my personality. And in checking with other people that were brought up in the conversation, I called them and said, you know, tell me about this. Tell me about what it was like to be around me. And my mother had one thing to say. Called some of my siblings, son of a gun, they had the same thing to say. I called some of the guys who used to work for me, talk with them, same thing. Called my best friend, neighbor that I used to live next to, same thing. And it was astounding to me that everybody was having the same experience of me, but that wasn't the experience I had of myself. And during these times, when you have these big observations like this, I said last week that it's kind of crazy making. It really is very unsettling, these times of depersonalization, these times when you find that the person that you thought you were is not the person that you are. But our valuation of the work holds us during those times. The work has a beautiful saying that it'll never give you more than you can have, more than you can take. God will never give us more than what we can handle. And the work also has a beautiful saying that in the work, you get what you need. Well, I was ready for a big buffer to come down. In a buffer, you know, when I was growing up on a farm, some of the early tractors didn't have rubber tires. They were metal tires. They were metal rims that used to go around, and they had spikes on them for traction. And there were no shocks on it. And you felt every bump. Every bump was a bone shaker. And buffers are kind of like that for us. Well, this whole idea that Donald's an honest man came down when I began to see that my whole view of myself was a lie. It was erroneous. It was my own imagination. And these times, valuation of the work will hold us. So when I say that it's crazy making, it's very unsettling, we have to also we have to understand that it's part of our spiritual transformation to wake up to this. Non-identification is to separate oneself from so much that is continually going on inside the heart and mind, and laying hold of oneself continually. So when we see these eyes, it's just good to know that they are just eyes. They're just programmed behavior that we've learned. And from that point of view, it is much easier to be with this during these times of depersonalization, of these times of loss of who we thought we were. Non-identification is an effort of attention, whereby one separates one's feeling of I from what is being observed. It is the realization that this is not I. So we've completed our observation, the steps that are recommended. And at that point there, we begin to take the next step in. And that is with the feeling of this is not I. Now, here's one of the challenges with it. For some who have been doing this for a while, it can feel mechanical. It can become mechanical. So self-observation during non-identification becomes really important. And I could see myself going around saying, oh, this is not I. This is not I. It was so casual. It was mechanical. And I was like, wait a minute. I'm saying it. I can see that the observation is there of the intellectual center saying it. But I wasn't feeling it emotionally, and my body wasn't sensing it. So at that point, what I began to do is I began to take the same steps with self-observation and use those with non-identification and say, this is not I, observing the thoughts of it. And I would stay with the thoughts with it until I was very clear with it. And then the next step, this is not I. I would work to feel the emotionalness of that, the truth of it. This is not I. This is just an energy program that's moving through me and has my life force. This is not I. And then I would feel the totality of that in my body. So actually, I'm doing a three-centered practice of self-observation with non-identification so that there could be a genuine movement away from that I. This is not I, experiencing it in all three centers. In the process of non-identification, there's an energetic sense of inner separation from what is observed. One's life force is being withdrawn from a fragment of the self, from a story, from a memory, from a picture, from a sensation, from an acquired way of being. And that is so very important, because in that particular moment, we have with us energy that is being used by these other eyes. And when the work says that we change the direction of the energy flow, where before the eyes were active, the eyes of the false personality were active and they had the energy and the essence was passive. And now through self-observation, we're beginning to change that. And essence is beginning to feed on the energy that's released from these eyes of identification. Now, all of us could experience that tonight with so many of the people that we're reporting. You could feel the lightness, the energy that became available through the self-observation when they began to move to the place of non-identification. Life force is available. It is a holy moment. By grace, we now have the choice of doing something creative, special, transforming with that energy. The next is that we know that we are non-identified when we can observe non-critically. So this is a really big point about observing I. Observing I doesn't judge. It just states what it sees. Now, there's other eyes that may be involved in the picture, and that's where the critic comes in. But observing eye does not judge. It observes non-critically. As we continue the practice, the build-up, the development through self-observation of observing eye, you begin to get the feeling of just how safe it is. And not only that, just how fun it is. I used to be a big Star Trek fan. And, you know, the whole idea of boldly going to places where no man has gone before. And I'd love to have my attention go out into the ethers. And Tim said one day, you know, what about that? So you go to a new star system. The problem with that, Don, is you take you with yourself. It's like, So you begin to open up the inner television by looking inside and seeing the places that no man has dared go before. And you take the same joy with that you are watching somebody else's imagination on a screen. There's a certain degree of self-remembering with non-identification. And that is so true when non-identification is truly practiced the right way. And that is in a pure, genuine way. If it's mechanical, if you've got no attention in it, it's not going to be the same experience. Next is, we then begin to have something that stands behind us, and that is a very great step to take. And this is big. Once a person has taken this step, he or she can never be the same again. When you get that clear experience of observing I, and you realize that you are at this time the observer, and you are just observing an energy pattern, there is such a freedom. There's a change in your being. And this part of what was written in the work this week is so true. You'll never be the same person again. And a continuation of what was said 2 points above that, and that is, there is such a freedom and such a joy as a playfulness when we begin to experience this. It's a little bit like hell in the beginning for those of us that are new to this. The idea of self-observation and seeing these eyes, it's very hell-like. But as we continue to practice, that lessens. And non-identification becomes a little bit more like the experience of purgatory. That is, I'm not in hell anymore, but I also realize I'm not in heaven either. That's the next step afterwards, the next step. And here's another point about non-identification too. We can't pitch our tent there. We've got free energy available now from eyes that were consuming it before. So now we have the opportunity for a conscious choice of what it is that we want to be. How do we want to remember ourselves? What will our divine co-creation be with this energy? We're never going to be the same person again. Let's become the Christ. And so we need these finer energies released by non-identification to work and to awaken. These are critical energies. So if we find ourselves weighed down a little bit by critical thoughts about how slow we've been learning, or about how difficult this is, or how distasteful it is, let's just remember that there are finer energies that are available. And even we can set an aim just for that. I want to feel the subtle energies, the finer energies that are available when I take my sense of I out of being right, when I take my sense of I out of being stubborn, when I take my sense of I out of feeling rushed, fragmented, even generous, even happy. Taking my sense of I out of those as well is good work. So we've got just a little bit of time with that. We can talk about some of your experiences with non-identification. I'm going to bring this off the screen for just a moment. If anybody has any experiences with non-identification you'd like to share. There's a very big point with it too, that it cannot be done mechanically. We just can't say, I remember in a class one time, Tim encouraged us to not move, or to be very alert to how our personalities sometimes want to self-observe and go right to self-remembering, without moving to the intermediate step of non-identification. And he questioned whether we're really doing it intentionally or whether it's just a mechanical movement. And so non-identification, if you really look in the commentaries and go through all the index in the commentaries, you'll find so many commentaries on self-observation and so many on self-remembering and so few labeled non-identification. But early on in the work, I had a sense that there was a real gem right in the center. That was a sweet spot that needed a lot of my attention. And I'm so glad that I gave it that attention. I see we've got a couple of hands raised. Tamara, thank you. I'm glad you stayed on.
Hi. First thing I want to say is I really appreciate, Marianne, what you read at the beginning. No one's commented on that I've heard yet. Actually, I'm struggling with non-identification. 3 weeks ago, Dixie, our 6-year-old dog, was bit by a rattlesnake, and we brought her into the Austin Emergency Center immediately, and they did not think she was bit by a rattlesnake. And for the next 24 hours, because of the host situation, we could not go in. Communication was very, very difficult. And they would not give her the antivenom until 2 hours before she died, and it was too late. And those 24 hours, my self-observation eyes were all my inner child eyes. This was 3 weeks ago. I have inner child eyes that are absolutely on their knees over this dog. I mean, she's beautiful. She's in the prime of her life. I was not expecting this. I have replayed those 24 hours. My kids, my husband, we were all involved. We replayed it. Maybe I could have said something different. Maybe I could anything to get a different outcome. And even after 3 weeks, now I have eyes that can celebrate the 6 years we had with her, and that know that it's compared to 24 hours. Those 6 years were happy. I mean, there are eyes that are beginning to balance, but I have eyes that will replay that, especially inner child eyes. Yeah. Anger, frustration. There must have been something we could have done to have a different outcome. Maybe I should have pushed harder. I mean, you know, all of that. And I know it usually don't work in real time, but I just wanted to bring that up.
Tamara, thank you for naming those eyes. Now, you were very, very clear on it. And with that, you realize, I could hear it in your voice, that there's so much energy available for you now for the movement into self-remembering. And you gave love, and love was given to you in a way that humans can hardly ever show through your dog. And Vizslas are really special dogs. Thank you, Tamara. Jack and Jackie, please.
Quickly about the difference of I falling away from I am to M.
Jack, I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Hello.
Yes, Jack. Hello.
I'm not identified. Real quickly, the first part, the I am, and then the I falls away, and the am. I just wanted to tell you, I had a revelation tonight. I am represents real I in the work. Yeah. Am represents no self with Bernadette. I could never reconcile those two things. And it came to me, it got me through that steady spot. I just want to honor that.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you.
Moving on to self-observation, non-identification. This morning, Jack and I are both reading the email, and I get to the point where there is a quotation from a commentary, then there's three dots and a bracket around a small t on he. And I am so irritated, and I'm telling, this seems small, it's big. What is the bracket thing? That always irritates me. Jackie really didn't offer much. The reality is I observe my negativity, and in my non-identification, the association was revealed to me and a buffer fell down. And the association is this, and it could be painful if I wasn't joyful about this. And that is this. I didn't go to college. I could have. It was represented to me, and my not knowing why a letter is in brackets was the root of my negativity. And at the moment of non-identification, it revealed itself. And that hasn't happened very often, where I'm not only am I not identifying, I'm being shown why I was hacked off.
Yeah.
And it was so cleansing. It was so cleansing. And it could be, I could be embarrassed about that. I'm not. I'm joyful.
Yeah.
I'm joyful. That
yeah. yeah.
Amen.
Thank you, Jack. Yeah. You bring up a very good point too about some of the things that we can do during non-identification. During non-identification is when I send something forward, when I send a future memory forward. I do it during non-identification. Before I get into the practice of self-remembering, it was like the self-righteous feeling of being stubborn. I remembered that from times past, and I sent it forward that the next time I have this experience of myself, I want that there to meet me. And see, what you just said is perfect for that. Thank you. Karen, please.
So I wanted to share, early in my days in the work, I had had a visceral experience of non-identification. So my husband and I'd had, you know, traditional argument over whatever, doesn't even matter. On my way home from work, I was playing in my head how horrible this was all going to be, how it was going to go down, and how terrible it was, and how wrong I was, all of those self-judgments. And the work came to me in that moment, excuse me, and gave me, this is not I. And truly a visceral feeling, I've described it as kind of an inner explosion, but a very, very positive, very pleasant, very sweet feeling of just stripping it all away. And, you know, I was at a stoplight on my way home, and it was like all of a sudden I could breathe again. And I realized, this is not I, and life is happening in the only way it can. You know, going then home to whatever it's going to be. But the fact that that moment, you know, getting that gift, that sweet, sweet gift from the work was just such beauty. And I will remember it forever. You know, it too was, if you will, a future memory that I can bring back to me mm-hmm. all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful, Karen. Way to keep the work hooked up to you, staying hooked up to the work so that it can grace us in that way. That all the hard work over the years that you've put into your spiritual transformation. Thank you. JC, you get to finish us up with this portion of the class.
All right, Donald, thank you. I've been setting a lot of aims recently around really trying to be in that edge where the first conscious shock needs to come. And so shifting this morning from self-observation into non-identification feels like another one of those edges. It's right there next to that first edge of trying to self-observe. And one of the things that I noticed, I read the email this morning, Rebecca Nottingham's reminder to put more of my sense of myself into the observing eye was so powerful. And I could feel that in my body. My body was wide open this morning. It felt like, you know, I love trying to align my centers and then working with chakras where there's seven or eight of them, really powerful. So that was wide open. And I had this moment as I started into my sit, a thought came up, and I didn't even finish the thought. I just noticed that it began with the word I. And it came to me that any time a thought starts with the word I am identified. It's that fast and that quick. And I used to think that, like, you know, I used to think I was an observing eye all the time. And so all of my self-observations were coming from observing eye. And they weren't. They were coming from other eyes. And so it was just such a powerful moment to recognize the pervasiveness of identification. And it's almost like that formatory part of intellectual center is covered in Velcro and is just looking for something to get hooked onto. So being able to see that in that moment and to feel that most of the thoughts that run through my mind in the day are not from observing eye, So there's a real, just a feeling of really beginning to notice that when I even have a thought, there's kind of a, huh, you know, okay, where's that thought coming from? Yeah. It was just a real powerful experience that was triggered by that, what Rebecca Nottingham, the yeah. email this morning and the class tonight, fantastic.
Jesse, thank you. Thank you for your sharing. And you're just like we had talked about earlier, you're never the same after a moment like that. We're never the same person after that. There's an experience of the work in inner parts of centers that belongs to you now. Yeah, amen. Well, we all received the email, so we know what the work assignment is going to be that we get to practice. Let's remember to practice with delight. You can see the joy on JC's face and so many others when they are working with delight. And the work says that's the way we should be working. So have a delightful week with their exercise. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Donald. With delight. I'll read this closing word from Rodney Collin. Someone who says, I am stupid, I am vulgar, I am bad, is blaspheming God, because God is in everyone. I'll read that again. Someone who says, I am stupid, I am vulgar, I am bad, is blaspheming God, because God is in everyone. It is true that we are all temples of the Holy Ghost. When we realize that we have done something stupid or vulgar or wrong, we should say, this is in me. I will take it out of me, because it does not belong in me. Because my real self is not like this, I will not act like this. When we act wrongly, we are acting, behaving in a way that is not in accordance with what we really are. Amen. So again, as always, let us join together in praying aloud wherever we are and affirm the prayer of God's love. That God's love has met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake. Watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep rest in Christ's peace. Amen, and good night.